going to see some replications here, and the purposeful replications, and that God understands us better than we understand ourselves, and He knows we're sick. One time, He knows how many times it'll take the stick before we really become part of our thinking process. Chapter dividing into verses 1 through 5 of being surety for obligations to others. Again, you're going to see this repeated several times more throughout Proverbs. Verses 6 through 11, those verses are against laziness. Verses 12 through 15, against wicked men. 16 through 19, against seven things that God hates. Verses 20 through 35, back into the harlots and adulteries. And it will be repeated again. So you can start to get the gist of how important God thinks that topic is. First one, Exodus 1 through 5, cover the same thing. My son, if you become a surety to your friend, if you don't quite get the word surety, it means if you become obligated to consent with your friend. If you have shaken hands or pledged for a stranger, you are snared. You're already snared. And what are you snared by? By your own mind. Yeah, I'll do that for you. Yeah, yeah. I'll do that for you. You're taken by these words. In other words, they're committed by these words. He says in the latter part of verse 3, immediately go and humble yourself. Plead. Listen, I spoke out of turn. God doesn't want me to make a pledge like this, and I won't out. Insist. I'm telling you right now, I won't out. I want to break his promise of the pledge that I made to you. Get no sleep to your eyes. You ain't got time to go to sleep on this. Don't think about it until you make a decision in the morning. Give no sleep to your eyes, no rest. Deliver yourself like a gazelle. In other words, you rapidly take care of this problem that you let your mind get into. And like a bird from the hand of a fowler, how quickly that bird will fly away if you just open your hands. You want to do that quickly to the person that you need to face to. And that doesn't mean that we'd be cold-hearted people. Don't you understand? That's not the purpose of what God was trying to plead with you here. God is telling you, don't put your family or yourself in jeopardy for a foolish pledge that you made to someone else to cover their debt. And sometimes we make these pledges out of arrogance. I'll take care of that. No problem. I'll help you on that. Instead of using common sense, if he fails, if this pledge that I made to someone fails, can I suffer that without it harming my family? When I say harm my family, I'm talking about from the children all the way up to your husband. Can I suffer that loss without it affecting my family? This is where I think God's common sense comes in. If you have the means that you can help that person out, maybe not to the extent that they want, but to help them out until they can get their head above water. Mm-hmm. And the loss of it doesn't affect your family, then sure, you help. But when the cost of that puts your home up as security, your car up as security, or your other properties that you have up to security, you don't go there. And this subject, by the way, is going to really be thoroughly covered before we get to the end of this book. I see hands up everywhere.
Well, Brian, I think that the philosophy here is don't enable people that have problems, that rely on you to fix their problem. If you continue to give them money or you continue to give them support, they never learn from their mistakes and stuff. I've seen over the years that a lot of people will give money to somebody who keeps getting financially in trouble, putting themselves also in financial trouble. Keep enabling somebody. You're not helping the individual, and you're definitely not helping yourself.
The very thing that got him in trouble in the first place, you're going to help him get back in trouble again. Yeah, Chuck.
Again, I know what you're saying about people would, who are in need would want X amount of dollars, or they want you to, again, help them out of their situation. Excuse me. But also, too, we have to keep ourselves in check, is that we, in the situation we find ourselves, can only afford to do so much.
Mm-hmm.
We can only afford to do so much. We can't do everything for the person. We only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. And that's okay. We need to be okay with that. But also understanding that all the things that the Lord has blessed us with, there is. We're pledging the Lord's stuff to somebody else. It's not ours.
Mm-hmm.
He's given us stewardship, yes. He gives us responsibility to take care of things he's blessed us with. But in my mind, it's all his.
If you have one needy person, one poor person that you pledge more than what you can afford to do, then you end up with two poor persons.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps going on and on.
Right.
If you think about it, isn't that common sense? That's just plain God given common sense to understand that. And if you can, and don't get me wrong, we're not be heartless people. I'm not suggesting that's what God intended here or what I'm trying to impart upon you. But think, ponder over these things. Seek advice.
Pray
over, that's right. But go to the source.
Right.
Go to the source and ponder over this. Just talk like Randy, okay, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some nice soft stories out there. I've heard a few of them. There's some nice soft stories out there. And sometimes you wonder, could I have done more? But hopefully by the time we finish this book of Proverbs, we'll be able to confidently say that I did it God's way. That's all we want to be able to say. After listening to all the problems out in the world, after reading everything God here has to say about him, I did it God's way. Let me begin Judy first, I'll come back.
We have the ability, or if we have the ability and the blessings that God gives us to help somebody else, I think we're obligated to do so. But as for me, it's, if I'm going to help somebody, it's a one-time thing. And I don't expect to get back what I gave. If it happens that they do give it back, great. But don't do it and expect something in return. If you have to have it back, you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. And if you can help and just don't expect it back, and then let the situation go. It's a one-time deal.
Again, it provides, it doesn't hurt the rest of your family.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
I can use Peggy's account to pay off the problem. It doesn't hurt me, But we all have one account, so it's just... But a lot of people don't, by the way. I'm surprised how many couples still have different checking accounts. Anyway, does anybody have anything else they want to put? Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Hear me out. Compassion will tell you you have not done enough. Wisdom tells you when it is enough.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that.
And again, that's why we have the scriptures to give us the knowledge into even affairs of the heart. Even affairs of the heart. That how that's supposed to be reined in. Mm-hmm. And when we get, how can I say this, so emotionally involved, and I mean it's the kind of emotion where it's in turmoil, it's on a roller coaster. You're caught up in the moment. They're tugging at your heartstrings. They know which buttons to push, and you're just feeling it, and you're feeling, oh, I would be a horrible person if I didn't do this. But God says otherwise, because the scriptures say otherwise. And again, we're fortunate that we do have the writings that help us to know the knowledge, and we ask God for the wisdom to temper our compassion.
That is why God's going to repeat this so many times. He knows that we get emotional about things, particularly when it's close kin. You know how that pulls at you. And that's why I think he covers it so many times. But I think by the time we get through with Proverbs, there'll be no question in your heart. That's the way we should go with this, yeah, Jim.
This compassionate thing that Chuck was talking about is especially difficult when it has to do with your own family member.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's not only compassion, but your heartstrings are involved as well.
Mm-hmm.
And but you still have to be at a point where you say, look, I can help you this time, but I can't keep doing it. You know, you need to be responsible for your own life. I'll help you out this time, but don't expect for me to keep doing it. Because people know, like Jack said, especially in your family, exactly which buttons to push.
Mm-hmm.
Where to get these heartstrings going to? You have to put your foot down even there.
The most common situation that has been passed on with it today was the cosign for a vehicle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's an expensive item.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an expensive item. And if you're not prepared to make payments, on a $25,000 or $30,000 automobile.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, don't do that.
But of course, it's just not only the payments. What about the car insurance?
You know,
there's a lot of underlying things that happen when you start doing that.
Right. You have to have that insurance if you're a co-signer. Because they're going to come after you. You're the final bill on them.
And the taxes.
They're going to pay the taxes, they're going all the way.
That's right.
So it's a great responsibility. Sometimes we just get into it and say, oh, yeah, just, they're going to make a car payment. No problem, I'll just sign for it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work out that way. 99% of the time.
Some people are such good manipulators. They know that, yeah, she says that, oh, this is the only time she can help me, but.
You enable them. Mm-hmm. You enable them to do the same thing again. But if not to you, to somebody else.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like quicksand.
Just a little bit. And again, that's an understanding in the very beginning. If it's a small amount and you can't afford, I'm not talking about car payments now, I'm talking about a short-term loan to get them over here, a doctor's bill or something like that. And you had an understanding then. It says, I'm going to help you because I can and I want to. I've got the means to. But don't keep coming back.
And the thing is, if you do, if they do come back and you acquiesce again,
it's the cycle
keeps going. So, like to say, no, that was it. You know, didn't you understand what I said? And if you do acquiesce, then yeah, the enabling just continues, mm-hmm. and you can't. It doesn't quit.
Well, that is called tough love, and we always say, yeah, that's tough love, and I can. Yeah. But it's hard.
It's hard.
Been there, done that a lot of times.
Yeah. But it is love.
But
it's just not what they're looking for.
But then these people make you feel like the lowest thing on the planet.
Yep.
But tough love, like you said, they don't get it.
And it's not beyond them to try to make you feel like you're responsible for their decision.
Exactly.
But we have to understand also, excuse me, because I was looking down as I was talking. But we have to understand that it's more ways in helping a person instead of always giving them money. Mm-hmm. You can help with advice. I'm good about, I can show you how to get there. Let me show you where to go. Let me tell you how to go about, doing this, because I had to do that for myself. I was young, messing up, but I didn't want to go to my mother and father and get them, because they didn't have anything. So you learn how to do it for yourself, and the people that keep on asking you, like grandchildren, people like that, keep asking you for stuff. No, Mama can show you how to do it, how to go back doing it. Let me help you. I will even go with you to the people
exactly
that you need to get this from. So we can help in more ways than just
giving
money.
This is what Proverbs is all about. Using things that you've learned, sharing that wisdom. Sharing it with, not only seeking it when you need it, but share that wisdom. We got wisdom here. We got wisdom. You people don't know it. We got wisdom in this class. Yeah,
sure. I think, like she was mentioning them too, is that I sat down with Jonathan and said, before you start the journey, let's do your budget.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have you understand what a budget is, so you will understand what you can or cannot do. Doesn't mean you don't have the ability to plan for it. If you want to go, let's say, for example, on a vacation, you can plan for it. But let's see what the budget will allow. So you may not be able to take the vacation, let's say, in 5 years. Mm-hmm. Reality is, based on your current income and all your other obligations, you're probably looking at 7 or 8 years, which is okay. Just plan for it.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
That goes back to when we raise these children, when we have association with them, start teaching them about money, finances, budgets. That's stuff that we should impart on. In the old generations, back in the Hebrew days, that was a responsibility to pass on to them, rules and regulations. And sometimes we don't do that anymore. We want to give our kids everything that we said so-called we didn't have. So we want them to have it. And they haven't learned that responsibility. So they make foolish decisions, and then they want us to suffer from them, but we end up a lot of times suffering. But we come together on this. I like it. Yeah, Judy.
Sometimes our kids can teach us too. And I give you an example of myself. After Mike passed away, I was in such a fog for several years that I just kept living the way we did before. Mm-hmm. But now the income has cut quite a bit to where I was really going from payday to payday. Mm-hmm. And I finally had to go to my kids. I said, something's got to give here. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. if I was in a state where I couldn't function, I couldn't think, I couldn't, which I exhausted me because I used to do it when he was TDY and taking care of my kids. But this, I was at a point I couldn't think, I was in a fog. So I had to go to my kids. And we did, we sat down, we did the budget, what I was bringing in, you know, what I was spending, what I had to do. My kids had to teach me again what I already really knew, but helped me to get out of this fog and get back on track the way I needed to be. So sometimes it's not us giving or helping our children. Our children turn sometimes around and help us old people too.
Never too old to learn.
Exactly.
In fact, you'll find that in this class, we're going to be wiser when we get to the end. But there's a lot out there that we're still seeking for, and God will give you. And God's ready to give it to you. First three, four chapters, I mean, he's pleading with you. I want to give you some wisdom. Chuck, do you have anything?
One last thing. There's been a saying that if you give a pig everything it wants and a boy everything it wants, you're going to have a good pig, but you're going to have a bad boy.
That is true.
It's true. It's true. You can see it's four rotten kids.
All right, verses 6 to 11. I'm going to a different subject. Notice how quickly he changes topics right here. This is against the laziness. He says, go to the ant, you sluggard. What he's saying is, I want you to observe the habits of the ant. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. Now, there have been a lot of studies who've come out and said that, oh yeah, the land, so they're well organized, and they got one level here that tells all these other lands. But then they've proven that wrong, particularly the book mentioned the detective animal, which detective animal has over the other end. But they did a detailed study in it. And there are no overseers there. They just instinctively, collectively know how to provide for the, not just for themselves, but for others, without anybody directing. So we often blame it, we often hear the complaint when someone is lazy, that you've got to go out there and you've got to go work. Well, I don't know what to do. You know, I haven't decided what, you know, there's no jobs out there.
Sure.
I'm busy doing this, helping this, and I can't do that. And they're all excuses. They're all excuses. And so God points us out to us. He doesn't like laziness. He wants us to be ambitious. He wants us to be the best worker that your job has. The best work. And how can I do it? If you worked 8 hours a day, you'd be the best worker.
Did you show up?
Did you show up?
Is he on the cell phone?
Oh, no. Put that phone away. Having come out of the business world, I'm going to tell you, if you give me somebody that just every time I have to look around, they're busy and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're few and far between, but they will affect the employer's attitude on the employee. What kind of, does he want to give him a raise? Does he want to advance him? Does he think he can do something, this job over here a little bit better? But we don't have that kind of worker. I'll relate to you a little story. When I was down at Sprinco, at one time I had a little over 600 people working down there under my control. Bull Payton was an elder over there at Clinton Heights. He had three boys. And he raised those boys as good, strong, and they still are to this day, good, strong Christian boys. Mm-hmm. they all three have to end up in college at the same time. Or for some reason, I don't know how it was that they did. But anyway, they looked for a summertime job. And they came to me and I put them to work at Renko. And they worked circles around those people that I had down there. In fact, the HR man, asked me every spring, can we get those three workers that you know back? Can we get you? And for 3 years, we kept them employed down there. And we would have been glad to have them as full-time employees in management, but they chose to go up in other areas. But it's just recognizable when you put out the effort. To just give the man what you agreed to do when he hired you. I think he does. Yeah, I work with you all the day. Yeah, I work with you all the day.
Right. Once again, as we get older and wiser through Scripture, the reason why we work is to please the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Is to please the Lord. Mm-hmm. Glorify God. See, for a lot of reasons. First, He gave you the ability. Gave you health. You're there again to do His bidding, to do the Lord's bidding. And if you happen to be a printer or a mechanic or a truck driver, whatever, that's you're there because God put you there, and you've got to let your light shine and glorify Him, and understand that yes, you have an overseer. God is watching you, even if you're a quote unquote homemaker. You're still working.
Well, yeah,
you're still working. So God is looking at you because He's giving you that responsibility and that role. Don't be like the lazy slugger. Be like the ant. Prepare the meals. Look for good deals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
We've heard that old saying, he worked himself to death. I ain't never seen it. Concentration camp, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah. Jared, the Bible says, do all things as if you did it for the Lord.
Exactly.
So if you attack a job with that mindset, then you need to do it right. You need to give it all that you got. And that applies to whatever job you're doing, whether it's out in the business world, whether it's in factories, whether it's at McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
whether you cleaning lady, whether you, even if you have a job and just scrubbing toilets, you do it with the intent of doing it for the Lord. Then you can't do it right.
Nancy's probably seen this too down in Florida. A lot of the fast food places have elderly people working in there. When I say elderly people, I'm talking about 65 and up. And those operations where they don't have the kids in there playing with each other, yelling at each other, they're efficient. I mean, those people work in there.
Hustle in there. Do the same thing.
However great or help that the unions did in the very initial part of it, they got to the point where they would slow down a fast worker and tell them, hey, you're making the rest of them look bad. You slow down. You're producing too many over here. And my own son-in-law worked for General Motors. He said they've actually done that when he was on the line. Hey, slow down. You're making the rest of them look bad over here. They're going to pay you whether you do 50 pieces or whether you do 75 pieces, it's all going to be the same. So that coming up through generations now is part of the problem why we have that attitude that let me just get by with what I can get by with. Let me get that cell phone in my pocket. I kind of had that cell phone. Yeah.
You know, this is wisdom for us, but we also need to realize this is wisdom that we have to pass on.
Exactly.
The verses prior to that talk about us not enabling somebody. We should be passing on the very next wisdom. If you're a hard worker, you won't have these issues. You won't have these problems. But generations after, like you just talked about, is teaching I had chores growing up. When I come home, my dad walked through the door, they better be done. But there's a lot of generations that I have chores. I ain't making my kids do that. And not realizing what wisdom and what strength you taught your kids. The funny thing is, the other day, Kim was giving me a hard time, and Christopher's wife was giving him a hard time, because Christopher's always early. I said, well, early's on time is late. And, we're not teaching that. We're not teaching that to be there ready to work and do that stuff. No, I'm going to show up to work at exactly the time they told me to show up to work, because that's when they paid me. No extra, no more, nothing else. We have to teach our generations.
Exactly. Jerry, it's like when my kids came up, and I think most parents from my generation said the same thing. When they wanted something, they had to work for it. Carlos wanted the car, so we had an option. You either pay for the car payments, and we pay for your insurance, or you pay your insurance, and we pay part of the car payment to help you with it. They learned they had to work for what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And all three of my kids, they work their butts off. In fact, they're working way too much. I keep telling them, you need to reserve some time for home life. But when you teach children from young on that they have to work for whatever they want, they will continue as an adult. But if you let your kids just slide, you don't need to do chores. That's what mom and dad is for. Or you need a car, well, that's what mom and dad's for. They get it for you. If you hand everything to them, then don't be surprised if they continue with that as they get older.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's read the rest of this. It says, how long will you slumber, O you sluggard? Will you rise from sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber. A little folding of the hands to sleep. How many of the people reach over and cut their lawn off? I just want a half hour more. We'll sleep a half hour more. So shall your poverty come like on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. They'll just sneak up on you if you let them. You'll end up always taking the easy way. I'll take a little nap right there. I think I need to sleep another hour or two. And I'm not saying that sometimes your body doesn't need more rest. This is not what this thing is telling you. But we know people who just would rather sleep than work. Or when they go to sleep, when they go to work, sometimes they go to sleep. They have to stand in there, but they're dozing off. I know when I worked one year at DuPont, and it was on shift. And I know on that graveyard shift, that people just found cubby holes where they catch a little nap. They just did. They knew they were hiding places to do it, and they would just get off. Just remember, when that man hires you for 8 hours, that 8 hours belongs to him.
To him, to the company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That 8 hours. Now, you can sleep when you get home, you can rest, you can do this, but that 8 hours belongs to him. Otherwise, you're cheating.
Mm-hmm.
You're stealing his money.
Most people don't.
We don't want to think about that. That's exactly what it's doing. Okay, let's talk about the wicked men, verses 12 through 15. A wicked man. A worthless person, a wicked man, walks with a perverse mind. If you start thinking now about the people that you've known or you do know now, you'll see a lot of these characteristics in there, and you don't want to become a close friend to this kind of guy. He winks his eyes. He shuffles his feet. Who do you mean winks his eyes? How about this, I got something on this person over here. This person over here can't see him, but he winks his eyes, Said, I think you're a great guy. He winks his eyes. He don't really think he's a good guy. He points his finger. His perversity in his heart. He devises evil continually. You know, we talked about those two kind of people, and their dictatorial person that just is thinking about what kind of evil he can do all the time. Not accidental evil and accidental sins, not if it's such a thing as an accidental sin, but the sin that we might fall into casually. But he just thinks about how he can do it, how he can say it. He devises evil continually. He sows discord. He wants to get disruption there. He doesn't look like harmony. Therefore, his calamity shall come suddenly. God knows what's going on in his heart. God knows everybody's heart. Suddenly, he shall be broken down with that remedy. Again, just a reminder that they're the kind of people you don't want to be around. You don't want to become. Just make sure we don't want to become like that. Because if we think evil, if we devise evil, we'll do evil. We'll do it. Yeah, Chuck.
I submit to you this. As soon as you start thinking evil, you are evil. You don't have to do it. As soon as you start thinking it, you are evil.
It dwells within you at that point. And it'll manifest itself. I mean, it has to. You're just not going to be a so-called good guy if you got evil in your heart. Did you?
Jerry, if you associate with evil people, you already sinned. Because you put your stamp of approval of what they're doing just by associating with them. So when people look at you, they automatically going to figure you're going to be just as bad as he or she or whatever. So we need to stay away from people like that.
Yeah, you can't help but become like them if you associate.
Exactly.
It's one, you're going to get warned in here quite a few times how you choose your friends, by the way, before we get through here. All right, Chuck,
what like you were saying, like we were talking about earlier, that if you associate with people like that, you're enabling them.
Mm-hmm.
You just enable them.
Yeah, you support them.
Exactly. And you don't have to say a lot. You don't have to give them money, but the fact that you're hanging out with them or acknowledge that, yeah, you are enabling them. And again, what does God think about that?
Good. I was hoping to finish this chapter, but we're not going to do it. Before we had good conversation, and we shared some wisdom here, by the way. I certainly appreciate that. I know the Lord appreciates it. We'll pick this up right here next time. Right here.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.